This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction with Chicago baseball expert Bruce Levine and Ryan McGuffey on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Really cool experience. The first day was just kind of a quick, just, you know, show up and play catch and get the body moving. But then today, I say today, you know, for us today, we had a workout that was open to the public, and there was fans that were there from, you know, the minute we showed up, and a lot of Cubs fans, a lot of Cubs jerseys in the stands, a lot of Imanaga jerseys and Seiya Suzuki jerseys. So the Cubs fans are definitely here, and they're definitely, you know, excited to see us. To see us play in person.
Good morning. Ryan McGuffey, Bruce Levine here inside the clubhouse on 670 The Score. Good to have Bruce back from a couple of weeks in Arizona, where it's actually colder there than it is here in Chicago. That was Tommy Hotovy about the experience the Cubs are having over in Japan. We are 3 days away from real baseball, folks. The Cubs and the Dodgers, 3 days away, Tuesday morning, 5 a.m., right here on 670 The Score. Bruce, good to see you, my friend. We have a jam-packed show. It's St. Patrick's Day. The smell of Irish whiskey is permeating the air as I was walking in, so I know all is right with the world. White Sox Director of Player Development Paul Janish at 9:30. Former Cub Joe Girardi at 10 a.m. He caught the last win the Cubs have had in Japan. That was 25 years ago. And Cubs pitcher Cade Horton at 10:30. Bruce, good morning.
Loaded show, plenty to go, lots of movement with spring training. Cubs in Japan, as you mentioned, Ryan. The obvious, Tommy Hotovy on our morning show, along with David Hall and Mark Grody yesterday, talking about the great experience going on there with the Chicago Cubs. As you mentioned, the Score is doing something really special on opening day Tuesday, as Pat and Ron and Zach will be broadcasting live from Wrigley Field. And then afterwards, the Mully and Haw show will be entertaining fans and enjoying the environment. Pretty cool way to open opening day Japan. Then the Cubs have three more opening days after that. They have opening day in Arizona on the 27th. Following Monday, opening day for Sacramento, the Sacramento A's, and the Chicago Cubs.
That's right.
And then opening day in Chicago the following week at Wrigley Field. So lots of festivities going on. You'll be able to hear all of that on the Score, as we will be broadcasting all the games again on this station.
Very unique experience. The content that's being done from Marquee, both on social and throughout the Marquee network, is really good. It's nice to see the access and the fun, to be quite honest with you, because this is not just a business trip. And I like when teams take the time to kind of embrace the culture, sightsee, and that the fans can actually take part in that too, because there's really Scotty Chagnon of Marquee is their great camera operator and digital photog, that he's just fantastic capturing and some of the sights and sounds. The Cubs did drop an exhibition game yesterday to the Tigers of Japan. I think it's the Guangdong.
I can't say that on the radio.
You can in Japan. So I'm going to count that. And then the Dodgers yesterday, in case you haven't seen it, Shohei Ohtani hit a mammoth blast. That's not a big shock. But the environment in the Tokyo Dome, and you hear Tommy Hotovy allude to that. Oh my God, Bruce. I mean, I would love to have that kind of environment really at any baseball game in the United States, because we know the type of player Shohei Ohtani is and what he means to Japan. And then you see a home run, that's it, and it's like, my goodness, look at the fans, just embrace it.
So I was fortunate enough to be in the Tokyo Dome when the Mets and the Cubs opened up the first opening day for MLB outside of the United States, contiguous United States, in 2000. And it was, you know, the city is sensational. The people are unbelievable. The dome and the experience, just unbelievable. At that time, I was working at ESPN for a guy by the name of Mitch Rosen.
I've heard of him.
And ESPN and the station 1000 at that time sent me to cover that. And, we were doing live updates throughout on a conventional hard line that they set up in the dome. I mean, you talk about 25 years ago,
right,
and technology, that was it. We got to get that hard line put in Tokyo. That was a big thing. And I was doing reports on ESPN and the local ESPN. So it was sensational to be there. And now 25 years later, you know, it's become a part of opening days. And this one will be the most sensational because you have five outstanding, you know, possibly five outstanding, at least four outstanding Japanese players, mm-hmm, who will be at the forefront of these games that they're playing there. And so much national pride for both Tokyo, for Japan and the United States. It's going to be great.
Yeah, absolutely. We've come a long way. To hear about the hard line, you'd think it's from like the 1980s. But no, folks, that actually happened here in the 2000s. We'll talk to Joe Girardi about that experience at 10 o'clock. Let's hear from Jed Hoyer, because it's a unique roster situation about who makes the trip and who didn't make the trip. And we talked for weeks about, is Matt Shaw going to go? No, yes, no. And he did make the trip. So let's hear from Jed Hoyer about the uniqueness of putting this roster together for Japan.
The roster will definitely be different, you know, by definition. You know, we'll have to carry more starting pitching. We have to make some other decisions along the way. It was a complicated and sort of interesting process to go through to figure out the roster. I mean, you've got to figure out the travel party. You've got to figure out who's active. You have to figure out who could potentially be inactive. There's a lot of things that go into it. In some ways, this feels a little bit unnatural. Like, we were making decisions and, you know, cuts and telling guys around the team on, like, a March 8th and 9th. These other teams are sort of in the middle of their spring training. So there is a quickness to it that feels strange.
Yeah, the one uniqueness to this trip, when you compare the one you talked about 25 years ago, is that the Cubs basically came right back and were continuing to play games. And this is a situation where it's kind of in the middle of spring training. They'll come back, hit the reset button before playing, you know, opening day against the Arizona Diamondbacks. So you hear Jed Hoyer talk about you're giving guys messages in early March while the rest of everybody's getting their feet underneath them.
They basically released Nicky Lopez, a player that would have fought all the way down till March 25th,
yeah,
for a position. He had had an outstanding spring training. He's a great veteran. He backs up three positions. He can do a lot of things. Those are the type of things you don't want to do on March the 7th or 8th, okay? That's the peculiar part of this spring training. The good news for Cub fans is that all the bench players and the bullpen guys have been outstanding in spring training. If you put any credence at all into performance in spring training, and when you have new guys, when you have young guys competing for jobs, you know, things have changed since the day where people would say, never put any real credence or belief in what you see in September or in spring training, and evaluate people for what they are and were before that. That's different now. You have a third base situation where you have the Cubs' number one pick from 3 years ago, Matt Shaw, battling against a guy that hasn't played higher than double A for the Detroit Tigers and was a Rule 5 draft in Gabe Workman for the third base position. And they're both going to make the team, okay? So with that in mind, things have changed in Major League Baseball. Cubs have a lot of veteran bullpen guys that are going to be vying for jobs. They have young starting pitching that could be at the Major League level, but will start at AAA. There's so many moving parts for them. And then you go across town and you look at the White Sox, and you got question marks about what veterans are going to start in the outfield, what young guys are going to start in the rotation. Will there be a 37-year-old guy opening day for the Chicago White Sox, their starting pitcher? Lots of moving parts.
Yeah, and but I'll say this, for a guy like Nicky Lopez, getting released this early might actually help him get a job elsewhere, including, there's an actual fit with him on the Chicago White Sox.
There's no question.
100%.
He's right now, if Montgomery is not making that team and he was sent out last week,
I'm calling him immediately.
Nicky Lopez could easily be your starting shortstop for the White Sox. Look, Travis Jankowski went from the Cubs major league team to vying for a starting position.
Yeah, probably start on opening day
for the White Sox.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't signed by the Cubs until March, very, very late in February, early March. He's only there for a week, 10 days.
Takes an Uber down to Glendale.
Here I am, right in the lineup. So a lot of different things going on with both teams.
312-644-6767. Get involved in the conversation here on Inside the Clubhouse. So I've been saying at nauseam almost that I think this Cubs team is going to be better than we all think. I do. And even with all of the question marks, especially, you know, at third base, is PCA going to take a big step? He certainly has had a monster spring. Is Miguel Amaya going to continue to improve? Is Michael Busch going to take the next step at first base? I do think the Cubs are going to be better, and I think it's because they have such great depth in the organization, both at the major league and minor league level. And Jed Hoyer talked about that depth earlier this week with you.
We're deeper. I think there's no question. I think, like I said, I knew we were going to have to make some hard decisions, and we're going to probably keep having to make hard decisions as we go. But I feel like, you know, we have a lot of young talent in AAA, so I do think that, you know, when we have the inevitable injuries or inevitable poor performance, I do think that, like, we have some guys that aren't on this trip that are going to play a big role.
You might have a rotation for the Cubs at AAA Iowa of Jordan Wicks, Ben Brown, Javier Assad, and Cade Horton. That might be your...
I mean, that is pretty incredible.
Those are your four starters, more than likely, unless there's injuries here between now and the 26th, 27th, when opening day in Arizona is happening. For the first time in years, the Chicago Cubs have actual depth at AAA, young guys that have pitched in the major leagues before, done okay in the major leagues before, that will be ready when the inevitable injuries occur to their pitching staff throughout the year.
Yeah, we've heard, you know, we've heard at great length, especially from the GMs in this town, you need 8 to 10. You need to have 8 to 10 strong, deep arms ready to go in your rotation. And that's for injuries. It's for guys who just don't have it, lack of success. You're going to have guys. There's going to be a shuttle between AAA Iowa this year in Wrigley Field.
Right. And that's why, you know, when people talk about the White Sox, they go, yeah, they have some good young arms. They don't have much depth right now, okay? And it could be a rough year for them. But, you know, looking strictly at the Cubs, they have veterans there. Now, the consensus among the front office with the Cubs was this, that the strength of the team last year was the starting pitching. But as we mentioned before, the ballpark played so big last year that they're not counting on their starting pitching that they had being as good as it was last year, okay? What they did count on, which what you said is true, and that is Hoyer went out and got depth for the team,
yeah.
Right? And they already have built-in depth with the minor league system starting to flourish a little bit for the Cubs and viable young pitchers coming through the system for the first time in, I mean, Assad has been in the organization for 10 years. You have Steele has been in the organization for 9 or 10 years. But they've only been around contributing as major league players the last couple of years. So it's been a long time since the Cubs have had any depth in their organization when it came to starting pitching.
Yeah, and if you look at last year, I mean, how do you go 83-79? When Justin Steele goes down, when Kyle Hendricks doesn't have it anymore, you're scrambling. And you can't be in scramble mode. When the bullpen's blowing saves, 26 of them, you didn't have the guys down below. You opened up the cupboards, Bruce, and there was not a lot there. And that's going to be different, I think, in 2025. We're going to talk White Sox at the bottom of the hour with White Sox Director of Player Development, Paul Janisch. Plenty to discuss. Colson Montgomery sent down to minor league camp earlier this week and more. Cubs chairman Tom Ricketts was on CNBC, Bruce, on Wednesday, and there was a couple of things that popped off that were notable to us, and I want to hear from him, including the break-even comment. So he joined us at Cubs convention here on Inside the Clubhouse, and it kind of, look, Cub fans have certainly been outspoken about the Ricketts family and the Ricketts, Tom Ricketts' ability to spend, and he's not doing this, he's not doing that. He only cares about breaking even. He discussed what he meant by that earlier on CNBC this week.
Maybe using the word break even wasn't the way I wanted to say that. Just want people know that, like, every dollar that's spent at the ballpark goes back into putting a more competitive team on the field. Away from that, everyone knows, every Cub fan knows that we've invested roughly $1 billion into Wrigley Field itself and the neighborhood around. So it's not a matter of us not investing. We are putting the best team on the field that we can every year. But, you know, there are teams that have resources that we don't, and nothing we can do about that.
So the tail end of that, might fans are going to be like, what do you mean there's nothing we can do about that? Bruce, we've been talking about the monster unicorn TV deal of the Dodgers forever, and Steve Cohen is operating at a different type of cash flow. I think we're going to hear from those two specific teams and what and how he operates. But he did open up the break-even comment saying maybe that wasn't the right choice of words.
So with the break-even comment didn't resonate well with Cub Nation. But the reality of the franchise having been bought at $855 million in 2009 from Mazzell in the Tribune, and the worth of the team now being over $5 billion, that's where the money is at, okay? So what Tom was saying is, we don't take money out of the Chicago Cubs. And he's not lying about that. What does $5 billion, your team being worth, give you? It gives you the opportunity, number one, you can sell limited partnerships, okay, which they did to help renovate the ballpark. I think they sold $200 to $300 million worth of limited partnerships back then to help, you know, build some equity to be able to absorb the $1 billion that they put into the ballpark in the neighborhood. And on top of that, you can borrow against that money as well, okay? The worth is $5 billion. So that's where the money's at. If the Ricketts family wanted to sell it, they could sell it in 5 minutes for $5 billion.
100%.
Okay? So that's where Tom backed away. And, you know, I give him credit in this interview with CNBC, you know, owning up to the fact that that statement wasn't complete.
Yeah. And look, it's going to be, we have the ability to edit anything, right? So when you hear that, that's going to make people cringe when they hear a break even and they're paying a family of four going to a Cubs game. Let's be honest, not cheap. I know the average ticket, I think, is like $74. And that's for, you know, the upper deck and stuff. He also discussed, I mentioned the Dodgers and the Mets and being in the National League and competing, you know, with that type of those type of pocketbooks. Let's hear from Tom Ricketts when asking how he's going to compete with the Dodgers and the Mets financially.
What we want to do is just be consistent. We want to win our division every year, get to the playoffs. And I can't do anything about what dollars other teams have, but what I can do is try to build an organization that keeps us consistently in that mix. And I think that this year, Jed Hoyer's done a pretty good job of bringing us back up from a couple bad years we had. But we have a really good farm system. We've supplemented it with several free agents over the last couple years. And I think that going to this year, we should be the team to beat in our division.
So I don't think everyone's going to love that either, because people want to win the World Series. But in order to win the World Series, you got to get to the postseason. You got to play in October. And baseball is different, that the best team doesn't always win and usually doesn't.
So since 2009, when the Ricketts family bought the team, till now, the playoffs have expanded, okay? So the conversation was, we want to win the World Series when they bought the team. They did, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the educated owner of the Chicago Cubs, Tom Ricketts, realizes that with expanded playoffs, and now he and his family running the team for 16 years, that the conversation is about getting into the playoffs, winning the division. That's just saying we're going to win the World Series, okay? That blanket statement, look, the Dodgers have gone, what, 12 years in a row with going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
They've won one truncated year in 2020 and then last year, mm-hmm. okay? The manager just got the biggest deal in history, Dave Roberts, going over the amount that Craig Counsell is getting. But he was one out away last year of being eliminated and losing his job. That's the reality of what baseball is right now. So saying you're going to win the World Series is really easy, but it's naive to really go out and say that. You want to be really good. You want to win your division, and you want to have a strong minor league system to go along with the residual dollars you have to spend on free agents and making trades. So with that in mind, I think everything Tom said is right, you know. And in this interview, I think he corrected the one area that was a little bit of a 75% statement.
All right, so there's fans that are fired up here. The text line's blowing up saying they ranked 12th. This is from the 630. They ranked 12th in total payroll. That's not doing everything you can to win a World Series. You got 630, another 630. It's a flat-out lie that they put the best team on the field. They've cut their payroll by $35 million. How's that putting the best team on the field? I'm looking at some of these payrolls, okay? We know the Mets and Dodgers rank 1 and 2. You know who's ahead of the Cubs? The LA Angels. You want to be the LA Angels right now? I'm not saying that payroll equals success, because I would argue it does in some ways. The top
where are the Texas Rangers at?
The Texas Rangers are sixth.
Okay.
Okay.
And what did they do last year?
But they did win a World Series 2 years ago.
So did the Cubs were sixth.
The Cubs were seventh in payroll last year. So, top six made the playoffs.
What I'm saying is, the Rangers spent an awful lot of money.
They did.
And then they stopped spending money last year. They actually dumped out of some money. So with that in mind, do you want to win one World Series and then end up where you were at trying to start over again? Do you want to be locked into those NBA-style
That's where
payrolls?
The Angels are in hell right now.
Yeah, they have NBA contracts.
Yeah. I'm not saying, like, the Cubs should go out and try to get the Juan Sotos, etc. Okay? They should. You should at least be in the conversation and try to land those big dogs. It's the Mets, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Yankees, the Blue Jays, the Rangers, the Astros, the Braves, Padres, Angels, and Red Sox are ahead of the Cubs. I think all of those teams, with the exception of the Angels, are in the mix. They're not the Mets and Dodgers.
Let's listen to one bite from Tom Ricketts talking about a big-time player that they might have missed out on.
We spent a lot of time thinking about what Bryce Harper's worth as a free agent, you know, with sitting with Theo talking about that. Like, you know, that's one that we kicked around that obviously we never executed on.
Woof. I mean, I thought Bryce Harper would have changed the game in both sides of town. He would have.
Right.
He would have changed the narrative forever by landing that guy. But you know what? We all have regrets. I don't know if that was necessarily a regret, but the fact that he used the name, the question was posed, is there a trade or a guy that you wish you could have had that you didn't? That's the only name he used. More on this conversation. We're going to hold on to this one. And if you have thoughts, 312-644-6767. On the other side of a break, we're going to talk some White Sox with Director of Player Development, Paul Janisch. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey here, downtown Chicago. It's good to have Bruce back in studio. It's Inside the Clubhouse. It's 670 The Score.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple, and I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 40% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I feel like everybody's a little anxious, you know, because if you want to be the best, you have to kind of envision yourself at the big league level. So, yeah, of course I want to see myself at the big league level, but also there's a lot of really good players also competing for jobs and things like that. So I'm going to respect with that, whatever decision they have, but, I mean, I'm going to do whatever I can to, you know, help the team win.
That's White Sox prospect Colson Montgomery down in spring training earlier this week. Sent down to minor league camp. Bruce Levine, Ryan McGuffey here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 of the Score. We're going to discuss that decision and more with our next guest. Now joining us on the Circa Sports Hotline, time to download the Circa app today.
And White Sox Director of Minor Leagues, Paul Janisch, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to join Ryan and myself on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, my friend. How are you today?
Bruce, I'm doing well. Good morning. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, we have to jump right into it. You know, the Montgomery situation has been, even since last September, when you talked to myself and three or four other media people up in the press box. You know, we talked about the possible Montgomery going to the major leagues last year, and your decision not to bring him up then, and now the decision of him going back to the minor leagues now and completing some of the things that he has to get done down there. How many discussions? How long did it take? How secure are you in the idea that he will not be your starting shortstop come opening day at the rate?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a bunch of variables, and there's a lot of conversations that are had, and I think it's, you know, Chris has made it very clear that, you know, it's a bigger picture for, you know, for the greater interest of Colson long term and obviously the White Sox. But yeah, a lot of conversations. You know, Colson had a little bit of a blip in terms of health here in spring training, and, you know, wasn't on the field probably as much as he would have liked to. I will say, to give him credit, you know, after he found out that he was going back down to minor league camp, you know, not going to be on the team, and the last few days on the minor league side, you know, he's been back in games, he's getting at bats, and his attitude has been very good, which, you know, says a lot about the kid. But look, at the end of the day, it's the decision is based on giving him the best opportunity to have success at the major league level. And at this point, you know, Chris and Will and the major league staff feel like him, you know, getting off to a good start in AAA hopefully will be what gives him the best ramp into hopefully being able to make his major league debut at some point this year.
Yeah, I heard Chris and Will. I mean, it's hard to put timelines on guys. You don't really want to because it's unfair maybe and unrealistic, but we kind of heard them say mid-year or mid-summer, which at least raised my eyebrows because it seemed like Colson was getting every opportunity to kind of win the job in spring training. Can the player a lot of times can force those decisions on their own, and is that what you're happening here, is that Colson does go down to Charlotte and just lets the play do the talking, that he gets the at-bats, he's on the field every day, and you know, midsummer or mid-year is kind of taken out of the conversation, and you just get what you need to see before he comes to Chicago?
Yeah, I think that's very accurate. You know, I don't know that it makes any sense to put any kind of timeline, to be honest. And, you know, the conversations we've had with Colson are more geared around, look, man, you need to continue to get as consistent as you can be, you know, defensively, offensively, mentally, physically, all of those things. And he knows that. And, you know, a little motivation never hurt anybody. That, you know, he wants to be in the major leagues, and obviously that's not going to happen to open the year, it doesn't look like. And, you know, that's fire for him, and we're going to continue to foster that. But look, we're still talking about the major leagues, and, you know, it's a hard transition to make, and we're going to do the best we can to, you know, to get him as ready as he can be. And yeah, timelines, I don't think it makes a ton of sense to put a timeline on it, because at the end of the day, if he goes down there and is on fire in April, and, you know, who knows what might happen when.
Paul, one more I have on Colson, and that is, how much of the fact that, you know, since you guys are in this humongous rebuild and there's still a lot of place to go for everybody, that you didn't want the total concentration to be on Montgomery and him having to carry the organization's hopes on his back at this point in time?
Yeah, I just don't think that's fair, right? Like, he's to put something like that on him, it doesn't make sense. Do we have high hopes for him? Is he going to be a very good major league player? Absolutely. You know, we all feel that way, but I don't think it's fair to say that, you know, the rebuild, so to speak, quote unquote, is relying upon Folsom. I think we need to look at it more individually, what's best for Folsom, and, you know, whatever timeline that is, I think he will dictate with his play and how it coincides with, you know, with the White Sox major league team. And, you know, when he's hopefully on that roster, we'll see. But I don't think that's fair to put on him. And, you know, all that to say, we believe he's going to be a good player. And, you know, he's still a young guy that, you know, is super talented, that we're going to try to help, you know, be as prepared as he can be when he does get the opportunity to go to the major leagues.
White Sox Director of Player Development Paul Janisch joining us here on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce. I'm Ryan. And Paul, you know, I'm one of those guys that doesn't get too wrapped up in spring training stats. I just don't, you know, like I'm looking at Kyle Tucker, not to talk about the other side of town, but like he went 0 for 17 in his first 17 and people were like, oh my God, it's spring training. He's getting the at-bats. That's really all I care about when I'm looking at some of these guys you guys are developing. But in terms of Miguel Vargas, who's hitting 400 down at spring training, how important was it for him to have a good stat line? Because we know after the trade, he struggled. He hit under 200 here, and it's hard to adjust to a new team. And if you're off mechanically, it's hard to adjust that during a season. He's having a great spring. How important was it to see Miguel Vargas come out there and do what he's doing down in Glendale?
Yeah, I think it's huge. And honestly, the baseball piece and, you know, getting some hits is great and a big piece of it. But, you know, I'll tell you, relative to Miguel specifically, the thing that you can tell just being around him in camp down here is just that he's a little more comfortable. I mean, at the end of the day, he changed organizations last year. And, you know, to your point, he struggled offensively at the major league level, you know, while he was with the team. But he's got a history of being a very good offensive player. He does a lot of good things, you know, at the plate with regards to controlling the zone and those kinds of things. So I would highlight the fact that he just looks comfortable, you know. And when I say comfortable, I'm not even talking about just in the box. I'm just talking about early work. I'm talking about, you know, to and from the field, you know, interacting with teammates. I think that, you know, we lose sight of the fact that there was a lot of variables going on when you get traded like that. And, you know, and he wouldn't either to make excuses for him in terms of last year, but that's what I see from him. And I think that I think there is a correlation to, you know, to the product on the field with just being a little bit more comfortable.
That's the voice of Paul Janisch, director of minor leagues for the Chicago White Sox, joining us here on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes. Paul, yesterday, Will Venable, the manager of the White Sox, pretty much said his starting four pitchers for the White Sox, barring any type of injury up to opening day, will be starting with Martin Perez. It'll be Jonathan Cannon. It will be Sean Burke, and it'll be Davis Martin, not necessarily in all that order. Give us an idea of some of the guys vying for five, but more importantly, in any organization, you know, six through nine, because we know rotations don't always stay the same. Injuries occur, unfortunately. Attrition occurs. Give us an idea of the next four or five guys that White Sox might be looking at for the starting rotation.
Yeah, it's hard to pin down exactly who will be the fifth guy. I know Shane Smith, obviously the Rule 5 pick, is thrown very well. It's in terms of stuff, it's been very impressive. You know, he's going to be adjusting to the major league level as well, potentially. And, you know, I think there's a couple other guys in camp that are getting built out for length. And, you know, it's just hard to predict how exactly that's going to go. So, I mean, in terms of naming who's likely to do it, I don't know. I think it's going to be a little bit more of a production deal here down the stretch, and the staff doing the best they can to evaluate who's going to be able to provide length, you know, effectively every fifth day. But yeah, I think the one to highlight is Shane Smith and seeing how that unfolds here, because like I said, the stuff has been impressive. And, you know, he's had a couple of really good outings, and, you know, one early when he struggled a little bit with his control. But like I said, there's going to be some adjustments to the major league level for him, but he's a big, strong guy with impressive stuff that'll be fun to watch.
We've been talking about needing depth in the rotation, how you need 8 to 10 whether it's injuries or, you know, guys just not having it, et cetera. But also in the bullpen, You know, how confident are you guys as an organization that you have enough pieces to get you through a 162?
Yeah, I think that the bullpen is, you know, it tends to present itself in a way that, you know, you're going to have to deal with injuries, unfortunately. Like, it's just part of the game now. And so you hope that it's just most of them aren't significant. But, you know, with the way that the bullpen is set up right now, you have a lot of guys that have options and that are going to get the opportunity to pitch at the major league level. And, you know, some of them are going to go down to Charlotte to perform early in the season and kind of wait their turn. So, you know, there's a lot there. And I think the best way to say it is there's an opportunity for competition for those guys. You know, some of those guys have been in the major leagues and are trying to kind of reestablish their footing at the major league level. And some of them are young guys that really don't have much rubber on the road relative to the major league level and are trying to get there and establish themselves. So it is exciting for those guys. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, some of our guys, like, you know, Fraser Ellard as an example, who obviously made his major league debut last year. But seeing those guys get to kind of get to the major leagues and go through that process is just, it's a very exciting for those guys and for us, you know, on the player development side.
The jewels of the organization appear to be catching right now. Can you talk about Quiro, and you can talk about Teal, and certainly Lee? There's still great hope that Lee, you know, has figured some things out offensively and is going to be a quality catcher in the big leagues for a long time. Can you talk a little bit about the other two and their progress this spring?
Yeah, you know, Kyle Teal is, you know, we're still really getting to know him, right? Like, this is his first spring training with the organization. And, you know, despite the, you know, the buildup and the expectation with him, he's really performed well and just impressed everybody with, you know, the competitive nature, the offensive potential. You know, he's the same guy every day. Like, you know, just to give you an indication, you know, he hit a home run off Roki Sasaki and Olave B on a backfield early in camp. And
oh yeah, we saw that.
I just highlight that to touch on the fact that, you know, I don't think the stage is going to be too big for him. He just wants to play baseball. He wants to play it hard. You know, it's just been really impressive to watch him work. With regards to Caro, he's done everything you can ask of him at the minor league level. He showed up. He's in very good shape. And, you know, he had a little blip towards the end of last season, you know, health wise, but he played, you know, caught a lot of games last year in the minor leagues, and he's progressing, you know, exactly as you would hope. Now, that being said, I do think catching is the catching position is one of the more difficult ones, you know, to make the jump to the big leagues. And most of that has to do with the fact that you're managing a lot of, you know, personalities, you know, from a staff and then from a game planning standpoint. You know, those guys are going to have a lot on their plates in terms of learning how to play at the major league level. And, you know, we feel like we've got the infrastructure in place to help them with that. And at the end of the day, both of those guys are talented. They're major league level players. And again, not to get too far into the timeline thing, because it'll happen when it happens. But, you know, we all feel really good about, you know, that's a good problem to have, having multiple guys that you feel like can perform at the major league level over the course of time.
Look, everyone wants immediate success, right? I mean, you guys came off of 41-121 last year, but sometimes you almost forget that you guys are new to this too, in terms of the timeline of when Chris got this job. It's been like 18 months, and where the roster was and organization was the day he took the job to where it is now, there's been a significant amount of change. A lot of it's been infrastructure and behind the scenes that people don't maybe want to hear about, but all of that's going to have an immediate impact on the major and minor league level. And then you see the roster, the amount of prospects, and where you guys are in the farm system rankings now in the short amount of time that you've been here. Does sometimes you have to take a step back, too, from wanting to win now and wanting some of these guys, you know, Kyle Teal and Colson and Braden, to be up here immediately so you can start seeing more wins? Do you have to take a step back sometimes and be like, hang on, the bigger picture here is right in front of us, and allow these guys to do what they need to do to develop to get here, and how we're going to do it is going to be on our timeline, not everyone else's?
Yeah, I think it's a really perceptive point to make, to be honest with you, because, you know, I tell myself my personal terminology is don't be greedy relative to that, because you got to do the best you can to remember it's in the best interest of the player. What's in the best interest of the player? And that's what we'll try to maintain in terms of a perspective. But look, at the same time, it's a balance, because, you've got guys that are really talented, which, you know, we talk about it on the minor league side relative to minor league camp, how you know, from a depth standpoint, you know, we're kind of in as good a spot as we've been in quite some time. And, you know, just remembering, look, we're trying to get these guys in a position, again, mentally and physically, where they're ready to perform at the major league level. And again, that's going to be different for each individual guy. You know, you've got guys with different backgrounds that have experienced different things and everything in between. So yeah, to your point, we're definitely trying to maintain that perspective. And it's, you know, patience can be a virtue, but, you know, we're as motivated as anybody to expedite the process and get the players, you know, as ready as they can be as quickly as we can do it.
All right, so I have a fun one for you. And I asked Chris this because everyone remembers their first home run. And Chris had three of them. So he, of course, remembered the counts and everything. But you go, and this is what I love about baseball and just kind of life in general. June 19th, 2009, the White Sox are playing in Cincinnati, and Chris Getz hits his first career home run. And who's in the lineup on the other side playing shortstop?
Yeah.
That would be Paul Yonish. Small, and now here you guys are running an organization. I just think it's just that's just, you know, that's baseball, man. That's the romance of baseball.
Well, it gives you an idea. Chris was a smart player. He knew if he was a great American, he needed to go ahead and get one out of the yard.
Paul, we appreciate it. You have a great day. All the best to you guys. I know, you know, getting down to this final roster is not going to be the easiest thing in the world, but I think the arrow is starting to point up for you guys.
No, I appreciate you guys having me, and I'm happy to get on anytime, and thank you guys. Look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Paul Yonish, Director of Player Development for the Chicago White Sox, here on Inside the Clubhouse. Plenty more. We got Joe Girardi at the top of the hour, the only Cubs catcher to catch a win in Japan, right? A regular season win in Japan 25 years ago. That and a lot more here on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce. I'm Ryan at 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
This Tuesday is the Cubs season opener against the Dodgers in Major League Baseball in the Tokyo Series. Pre-game coverage begins at 4:35 in the morning with first pitch at 5:10 a.m. on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. And it's going to be fun to see Workman and Shaw kind of battling it out here. I mean, Workman's in a position where he's a Rule 5 guy. So if the Cubs didn't keep him, he's got to go offered back to the Tigers.
And then he has to go through waivers.
Right.
So there's zero chance that he will not make the team, you know.
Because he'd be swooped up immediately.
Well, I mean, he's just, you know, again, how do you evaluate in spring training? What do you put on it? You know, usually, you know, you can end up with a Gary Scott going back 30 years ago. Yeah. You know, you don't want that to happen. But again, Detroit has so many good young players. You saw them come on so strong in the last 6 weeks of the season and get a playoff berth when they were horribly out of it. They played great the last 6 weeks. And a lot of it had to do with Baez getting hurt, being out the rest of the year, and younger guys stepping up. They have a lot of good young players. That's why the Cubs astutely saw that Workman was going to be vulnerable to the Rule 5 draft, and they swooped him up right away.
So how does it change when they come back? Because is there a chance that Matt Shaw now does not make the opening day roster here in the States? Yeah. Can you explain?
So here is the thing. Workman, you can't allow to go to waivers or back to Detroit. So he makes the team.
Right.
Then you have an automatic bench spot for Turner, right?
Yeah, 100%. You're paying a
good amount of money for Birdie, okay? You're going to have Horner coming back. Mm-hmm. They think by opening day,
right?
Okay. Then all of a sudden you have Brujan, who has played great, plays shortstop, plays center field. He's their only infielder, outfielder to back up the outfield other than Suzuki, who's a DH. So it presents the problem of Shaw is the only one that has options.
Yeah. It feels like to me he's going to be the odd man out. I mean, that's the thing that people – I had a buddy who like, oh, I'm so glad Matt Shaw made the team. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. hang on, not so fast. He made the Japan trip. He didn't necessarily make the team because there's going to be a roster decision to be had when they come back.
So it might boil down to the fact of is when Nico Horner is ready and that he's playing all games now and looking good right now after having the forearm surgery, when he's back, the decision will have to be made on Bruhan or Shaw going back to AAA, okay? And then you have Workman at third, you have Birdie at third, you have Turner at third. You have all kinds of options, okay? Ideally, they want Shaw to be the starting third baseman. But the numbers are really gaining on the Cubs, and they really have some difficult decisions to make for their next opening day, which is the 27th of March against Arizona in Phoenix.
Matt Shaw is not coming up here to play every third day.
No.
Once he's on the team, he is your starting third baseman.
Right.
And those are some veteran names. That's the one thing I like about this. We heard Jed Hoyer at the top of the show talk about the depth of this team. Those are some legit major league names that you just threw out there. So Matt Shaw might be the odd man out after the fact, after the Japan series, and it's still okay. It's still okay.
It is, but Workman has to stay on the roster all year. He's a left-handed bat. He's got power. He's got speed. He can play second. He can play right field. Ideally, they think his best position is third. Do you start with a platoon of him and Shaw, and you let Bruhan go? Okay,
possibly.
Or does somebody get hurt, and it solves your problem between now and opening day?
We're going to keep this conversation going. We're going to have former Cubs catcher and successful manager as well in the major leagues, Joe Girardi, joining us at the top of the hour. He caught John Lieber's win back in March of 2000. Bruce was there in the Tokyo Dome. We're going to discuss that and more. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. It's Inside the Clubhouse at 670 The Score.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.